This is part one of a two parts podcast.
All right, I got Jeff Lawton on the phone. And Jeff, the very first question I want to ask, because it's not on my list, I'm afraid I'm going to forget, is, hey, have you seen my playing cards?
I have. We've got them here. One of our staff is selling them to students. They're great.
Okay, you can make me very happy by saying that you think that they're nice.
Nice would be a very good term, yeah. They're very mellow, actually, in color. I like the sort of organic look to them.
Now, you told me when we started this interview, you said that you wanted me to come up with the toughest possible questions and just nail you with anything I can think of that is just out of the park, that is going to very much push your comfort zone. And so I suppose one of the things is that I've gotten a lot of people that have asked me, because when we did the Kickstarter for the playing cards, then one of the cards was the Jeff Lawton card. And then about like the second day of the Kickstarter, you emailed me and said, "Ooh, hey, could you like not do that?" And I was like, oh, "No, I've offended Jeff Lawton. How did I do that?" And then I wrote back and I said, you know, something like, "Please tell me this has to do with religion or something, and not because you hate my guts." And so your response was.
Yeah, well, it was a mixture of things, actually. The whole identity that goes with a playing card, are you a jack, are you an ace, you know, are you a king, are you, like, I hope you weren't going to make me a queen, but, and where did I feel comfortable to fit? And I really, I'm not sure what I deserve apart from what other people make me up to be. I mean, I don't necessarily want to fit anywhere particularly. I just want to do the best I can to help people. So I felt uncomfortable about, you know, how was that going to be seen? The other thing is I work in a lot of traditional communities. I work right across the world in a number of culturally quite difficult places. I put a lot of hard work in and in some places, people wouldn't understand my image being on playing cards. And it wasn't all a religious scenario. It was also a traditional scenario. And I thought, like, I could make it quite difficult for myself. And I think there were plenty. I mean, there's so many great people in permaculture that could equally take my position. I thought, best not take that risk, but it was very nice that you mentioned me on the playing cards without sort of imagery, and I'm very grateful for that. Thank you.
It took us some time to redo the cards, but we're happy to do it. And I think we added Willie Smith in into the deck. And but how we, that's a very good point. I don't think we've ever brought it up in any of the podcasts. When Alexander and I went through the list, I made the list of all the things. Of what the cards would be, 52 different things. And then we started juggling around where they would be on what card. And then and exactly what you're talking about, who are the aces and the kings? Well, we made sure the aces were all things or concepts. And then for the kings, then there's one king that's the suicide king. And we thought, wouldn't that be terrible if we put a person there and then, like, later they died and they actually did commit suicide? That would have been horrible. To have that as a card. So we made sure that the suicide king, I think, is bamboo. One of the kings of permaculture. And then, so for the three kings, then we went with Bill and Sepp and Fukuoka as the three kings, which I hope you'll agree with that choice. And then for the queens ended up being very controversial because we picked Ruth Stout, and then we, you know, had other things being the queens, and then we went with the jacks. And so you were a jack, and we had a few other jacks. But that's kind of like a rough thing. We did spend a lot of time figuring out what goes where, but it was it was challenging. I mean, we spent hours arguing over that. So I don't know, maybe we should have. It's entirely possible that we may have stepped inappropriately in not making you a king, which you would then turn that one down too. But where I don't know. I think they turned out pretty good. We get lots of feedback from a lot of different people saying we've done it all wrong. So I think it's one of those things where you just jump in with both feet, you make the best of it, and hope you don't piss off too many people.
Yeah, I mean, there will always be people choices that you could include, I suppose. That's the sort of issue. And myself, in the last few years, especially during the international conference at Jordan, I was accused a lot by people of, you know, trying to set things up just for my own promotion. So I've actually gone out of my way to make sure that people don't see that's the way I operate. It's just, you know, for my own promotion. So I like the way you've put in certain elements that are very educational. There are things there that are Watafi and different things that people wouldn't know what they were until they sort of picked up the card, and then they say, you know, whiskey tango foxtrot, what is this, you know?
Whiskey tango foxtrot. Is that what that stands for? Oh, I didn't know.
By the way, interns is walking around with that T-shirt on, and I thought, well, that's a nice way to say it, you know? I like reading T-shirts. I saw one the other day that said, eternity is really long, especially towards the end. And that's like permaculture. Permaculture is like that. It's really complicated in the beginning. At the end, it's quite long, you know.
So now, I kind of feel like, and this is something that I kind of feel is an important thing with permaculture. I mean, you're talking about how you are now making life choices based on people who accused you of things, and the accusation was false. And I chastise myself for spending too much time on detractors. And I think it's probably only about 1 out of 30 or 40 that I'll respond to. And I feel bad because it's only about 1 out of 100 people that have something positive say that I respond to. And so I feel like I'm rewarding the wrong group with my time. But then it's I think I work really hard to not allow the negative Nellies to dictate how I run my life. In fact, I kind of find some pleasure in, like, whatever it is that they say, to do the opposite. But it does seem like even then the negative people run the way things are. And for some of the questions I've got coming up, I kind of want to express that, you know. And I've been thinking about this a lot because I've got my keynote coming up at the Voices conference soon, and it's kind of like I was asked to present on something for which I have a unique perspective in permaculture. And you know, because of the size of the media stuff that I do, I think I might have a relatively unique perspective in that. And before doing the forums out at Permies, I did the forums out at Code Ranch, and the analogy that I want to introduce is it's like being Captain Picard on the Starship Enterprise, and you're cruising through space, and once every 3 months there's actually something interesting going on, and then you're going to do something. But it's so rare that there's anything interesting to wrap your head around that the uniform that everybody wears is pajamas. You just stay in your pajamas all day. And then when a problem comes up, then you all sit around and think about it way too much and really kind of try to contemplate how to deal with this problem. Whereas when I started Permies.com and the permaculture forums, it was like 2 days into it, the Joker from Batman shows up. And it's like every other day we have a brand new Joker who is like crazy in a whole different way. And it's day after day after day. And a lot of these people, I mean, while a lot of them are going to be like trolls or corporate trolls, like they're paid to come and say crazy things by big oil, big pharma, big whatever. You know, Kim Ag would be a good one. And I imagine that you get a lot of this as well. But a lot of them I know, I've met, and they're regional leaders. These are people who are somehow considered to be the best in permaculture in a region, and the stuff that they say is utterly unacceptable. It's like they're a new flavor of the Joker. And the stuff that they present is like everybody should love everybody else universally. And then the very next post is calling a bunch of people that are on Permies a bunch of idiots, which now people at Permies know we don't allow anybody to suggest that anybody on Permies is anything less than perfect. And so then it's like, really, do you have to use the word idiot? Do you have to call this person that you're in a conversation with here on Permies.com, do you really need to call them an idiot? And the response of a regional permaculture leader is, how are they going to know that they're an idiot and have it stick and have them remember that they're an idiot unless I tell them publicly? And then they wonder why I remove the post. And they're angry, and they think they call me a censor and all that stuff. I guess the point I'm trying to make is that as we try to solve our problems in permaculture, then it seems like it's an uphill battle, and the people that are holding us back and making it difficult are some of our regional leaders. My primary thought is like, really, is this the best we could come up with? Is like this guy, you know? So I'm sorry, Jeff. I may have gone off on a tangent.
Yeah, I think I know exactly what you're talking about, and I think we have to address it with the classic permaculture saying: the problem is the solution. And they're self-identifying themselves in some ways that they're not up to the task, and they've let it get to their ego. You know, it's if you're going to get out there in front of people, you're going to need some authority for people to listen to you, and a little bit of celebrity status is going to help. People know who you are, and maybe a bit of an X factor in front of an audience or a camera is going to help too. But a little bit of controversy is not bad as well, because it works in a way that you get to answer the controversy in a very positive way. The controversy comes up as negative, you know, people accuse you of things, and it gives you that opportunity to work a little bit on the positive side of what they're saying and make it a proven point that that's not the way it is, and things are completely different, and this is where we should be concentrating. So I feel the same way. People come along and they give you all these issues, and it's really great practice to work on, and how you turn that around and say, no, it's this way and it's that positive, and there's the result, and it leads to a solution. And it's a bit like advertising itself. Here's a problem, here's how we address it, and there's the solution to the issue. And conciseness is the absolute master skill on this. Bill Mollison is the master of conciseness. You know, information density in one sentence, it's very, very samurai the way he can just cut it down very quickly. And he doesn't actually call you an idiot, but if you listen to the reply, you kind of get the same idea.
I think Jack Spierko emailed me the moment he listened to one of those, because you got that DVD set that's now kind of old and outdated. You know, compared to what you've been doing with PDCs more recently, but it's apparently at some point in time, Bill said something like fascists, eco-fascists or something like that. But there's this concern over people that are being hostile in the name of wholesomeness. But anyway, along these lines, there's been some stuff recently. So you and I are both going to be keynote speakers at the Permaculture Voices event. And I think there's like 7 keynote speakers. So it's one of those events where it's going to be very keynote rich. And I've heard a few different people say that they are going to not attend because there's only one woman listed as a keynote speaker. And now I've written quite a fair bit now on this women in permaculture aspect, but I thought I would throw it to you to see what your position on it is, including if we're going to displace You know, if we're going to add a woman in, you know, if you could nominate or whatever, or you were in charge, who would you pick? Who would you pick as a woman that is like probably the greatest woman in permaculture right now? And then who would you displace out of the current speakers in order to get that woman on there?
Oh, well, I actually don't know if I could do that. I don't kind of think that way. I can't even remember the name of the speakers who were there. There's so many. I haven't paid attention to who's a keynote and who isn't either. Because I tend to approach these things quite ad lib. I haven't even thought about what I'm talking about yet, and they've only just given me the subject, so I've just decided the subjects with them. I'm doing four talks there, and my wife is doing the talk, Nadia, although she's not a keynote. And I had the same situation when I was helping my wife set up the Jordan International Conference. They were all keynote men speakers in the keynote there at the conference. And I think sometimes it's just a coincidence. It's just a haphazard, random situation. It's not necessarily that it's anything orchestrated. Why would it be something orchestrated? Men and women are all equal. And if it happens to be all men, the women should be fine about that. It happened to be all women, men should be fine about it. What difference would it really make? I mean, sometimes that's just the way, you know, the cards fall. I'm not sure I could pick anybody in particular in the permaculture movement who's out there as a woman right now. I would say that's the number one keynote presenter in permaculture. There are many wonderful women out there who are doing incredible work. And someone recently from Ithaca Eco Village, Karen, asked me to give her a list of women that I really respected in permaculture, and I came up with many, many, and she was writing an article on women in permaculture, which got published in the Permaculture Activist. And there was many that a lot of the women are close to family and close to home and close to working with people at a much closer ground level. So they're not necessarily at a distance traveling so much as men. I know Penny Livingston does a lot of work traveling, and she's always out there traveling around the world. Robin Francis is always out there traveling around the world. Ro Morrow's the classic itinerant. She's always at a distance, you know, working at, you know, all different remote sites, and she's always on her own working. Penny Pyatt does the most incredible work in Australia, in Sydney. And she's, you know, mostly institute home-based. You know, there's been many women come through and then have children and slow down to be, you know, home-based with their home families and then carry on at a different level. There's that sort of change in career that happens sometimes with the women as they become mothers. But I'm where Lee Brown in South Africa is working in the Cape Flats in most incredible hardship there. I mean, it's really hard to start naming names because they will keep going and keep going. And if you're out there presenting and you're online, you're online today. I mean, your presentations are on YouTube. Your presentations are on TED. Your tech presentations, you know, on some kind of digital video form. It's the screen age era. So that's where you get picked up, don't you? So I'm thinking it's something like that. I mean, I wouldn't put any labels on it. Why would we bother putting labels on it? It's a little bit late. The Titanic's sinking. It's there's no point in arguing about who's selling deck chairs, you know, as she goes down.
Well, I do think that when people suggest that there's a problem, that it's a very serious accusation. It's the accusation of sexism or possibly misogyny. And so I kind of feel like, you know, they need to be able to back it up. But as soon as you ask them these kinds of questions, it seems like they disappear. Generally. I mean, I had one person who decided to stick around for the argument, and then I've documented that pretty thoroughly out of Permies. But along these lines, I've got my own theories on where the women are, and I believe that my position is that when and this comes back to my analogy about Star Trek and when I was talking about, you know, the forums that I had before, which were about software engineering, and now the Permies forums, it just seems like the level of hostility that comes from certain people within the permaculture world is rather significant. And it's I think a lot of it is external and a lot of it is internal. There are people who want permaculture to be just their way, and anybody who deviates from their way, then they have to, like, I don't know, shout them down or show their anger and show their displeasure. And so, for example, we had a woman who posted at a Permies. She posted hundreds of very generous posts of all the things that she's doing on her homestead, all the permaculture stuff that she's doing. And then she showed a rocket mass heater that she put in a yurt. And there was a response to that. And there was a woman who said, if you had a baby sleeping on the floor, the baby would die of carbon monoxide poisoning. And so you would be a baby killer. So then the funny thing is that, okay, A, it's not a rocket stove. It's a rocket mass heater. So it's not like something's being combusted inside and the exhaust is put inside. B, this particular rocket mass heater never had any gases in the house of any kind. The wood feed was outdoors. And so basically I think that the woman who said the nasty things, I think she didn't even understand what was going on, but she did clearly accuse the woman who did all the work, took all the pictures, of being a baby killer. And I basically think that this kind of horribleness is really common, and thus my unique perspective into the permaculture world at how much hostility there is. So the woman who shared wrote to me and said, and this is after 500 and some odd posts that she's written, she wrote to me and said, she's never going to post anything again. She will never share anything again. This is not the first time it's happened, but the level of hostility that she receives for being a person who shares so generously has been far too great, and she's done. She just doesn't need this kind of hate. And I think and her word was hate. I think hate is an extremely accurate word, because this I do classify this as a form of hate speech. And it's funny, I don't know about you, but when I hear somebody utter the words like, we should all love each other universally, my concern level goes way up. I immediately fear this person. I fear that this person is going to be a source of hate speech, because it's a pattern that I've developed. When I hear somebody say those words, they are typically the source of hate speech. And I think maybe they say those words to help to help soothe themselves or help cure themselves. Like, maybe they recognize the hate speech within themselves and they're trying to resolve this or something. But it's just now become my experience that people with those kinds of words on their lips are the people that are typically the sources for this, what I call them, the hate in the name of love crowd. So I'm sorry, I'm making this response to why are there not more women in permaculture? I think, and I would love to hear your perspectives on this. I think that only the people that are prepared to be the most durable get far enough ahead in the world of permaculture to possibly be a keynote. You don't think this is true?
No, I do. I think you're right on. I can see exactly the angle you're coming from. You have to be pretty pig-headed and thick-skinned and just keep doggedly marching on. I'm sure you receive some hate speech.
Oh yeah. I mean, they've got organized groups out at Reddit. You could actually go to. There's a subreddit out there dedicated to tracking me and being so that way they can, in an organized fashion, hate me.
You're cyber-stalked, and I am too. And I think everybody who's out there making a change is I think there's enormous jealousy of fame. You're famous, and it's more than wealth. If you're rich, people are jealous of you, obviously, in money, but more so. There's some sort of feeling of immortality if you are one to be remembered and you're famous. So there's this fame deficiency. And with that, an attack angle to get it, or you're famous because people know you and what you've done. So it comes in, and Craig McIntosh and I deal with this a lot at permaculturenews.org. And we two words come up all the time in relation to this: subjective view of permaculture or objective. We should be objective, not subjective. So this poor lady who's got the wonderful rocket mass heater with all the right induction and exhaust systems in her yurt, and she's got every entitlement to do that, and a wonderful thing to explain to other people if they want to live that way and use those same systems, is attacked by someone who's got a subjective aversion to that lifestyle, but is also primarily their objective, their real narc is, this person's done 500 posts and they're well known, and why should they be? Because they're not. And really, instead of directing their hatred, they should do something as good or as much. And she would be noticed too. People find it very hard to know how to get into being the right sort of person that becomes well-known and famous. They don't want to make the sacrifices. They don't want to do the work. They don't want to do the hard yards. And it's not that hard to be well-known in the permaculture world. You just go out there and do good work that helps people. It's not a hard system to get involved in. But the
problem is that you go out and you do good work, and you get, and when you get to be well known, now you attract all the haters. Most of which, I'd say 90% of the haters, their whole mission is that when you open your mouth, you cannot say the words that are in your head. You must say the words that I tell you to say. I bet you I have over 10,000 people in the permaculture world who have contacted me personally and told me what I need to think and what I need to say. And a lot of these are regional leaders here in the United States.
Yeah,
is this what you experience? I've deleted hate stuff for Jeff Lawton off of Permies. I mean, so that your haters are on my site, man. and I've deleted them. I'll bet you I've banned a dozen people because their hate just got out of hand, and it's like, oh, that's okay, dude. We've had this conversation 7 times. We're done. You're out of here.
Yeah, I think it's the epitome of that is probably in America because of the crisis identity that people have in the new world, the free world that came out of Europe, and everybody had the potential to be anybody in America. That was the new world, and that theme has continued. That out of the older Europe, where people lived in the lifestyle that they were born to, and they couldn't rise up to be lord of the manor and that sort of thing. So there was this, what ended up a situation of sort of crisis identity, because you are what you've made yourself, not what you were born to be. And that theme has carried through. A funny thing in Australia, which is, a colonist nation, and a very hard place to live because we're the driest, flattest continent on earth with very few people and great distances. There's a there's a fair go type attitude, and she'll be right, mate, and no worries, and all these Australian sayings that look after your mates, and you never know when you're going to need a hand, so you've got a fair play. You've got to have a fair play type attitude, and it isn't quite as much, although it's still there. It's definitely still there, but it hasn't got this open door policy that, I have a right to say it, and I have a right to hate it, and I have a right to be heard. It's slightly different here because of a sort of colonist situation. And I see similarities in Canada a little bit, and New Zealand, which are also, colonist type countries. Australia is probably the epitome of Western colonization over a large, hard landscape. America is more the epitome of that sort of the modern civilization of everybody has a potential. Everybody could become, whoever they want to be, even the president. So it comes with that. Oh, well, I can try and tear you down as much as you can rise yourself up. Sense of equality. But I think our greater mission, permaculture carries a persona that's larger than life. It continues to march forward. It has those wonderful, simple strategies. Bill's a strategist, an incredibly subtle strategist, and he put all those strategies in early on that made it unstoppable, and that was very selfless of him to do that. And that's why we continue today so rapidly. But people, you will find people in permaculture, they're absolutely supporters and loving you 1 minute, and then if something doesn't quite go to the way they want it to be, the subjective view, there's some hidden subjective view they've got, suddenly they become your enemy. They go the other way. They get a polarization. That's kind of disturbing, and I try and spot that and help avert it if I can with people and try and get them to understand. It's not always that great to be someone who's got to lead other people a bit and be well-known. It gets to be... It's hard to work on yourself to stay your normal, likable person. I very rarely go out now without someone recognizing me in the street in our local coastal town, which is a sort of international backpacker location, Byron Bay. There can be people from all over the world. And I've got used to it now. It's quite nice. People come up and they say, "Oh, wow, Jeff Lawton, I've got your DVDs. I've seen your videos." Or, "Jeff Lawton, I worked in Haiti as a volunteer, and I saw your grin in the desert. It was awesome." And then they introduced me to their mum, and I said, "Oh, well, it's kind of nice, you know. Okay, I just be myself. Like, I just, like, you know, I'm just normal, you know." Like, people come up and meet me and they say, "Oh, you know, I've got all your DVDs," and my first response is, "Well, this is a bit weird, probably, isn't it?" And they say, "Yeah, it is, you know." And I say, "Well, being human, you know, I like to be human as a teacher. I like to be human as a speaker. I like to be human on film. I ad-lib all my films. I don't have any script. We just run it. We run it and play it as we go. We're playing a game. We're just playing a real game. Nothing is scripted. It's just as it comes."
So now, on that note, on the scripted note or the non-scripted note, it does seem to me like when I watch your videos that it does seem like you are feeling your words, whereas the only time I've seen you kind of not, you know, kind of be displaced is when you did your TED Talk. And so were you trying to do a script during your TED Talk?
Both TED Talks I've done, they tell you you've got to give them a script.
Right.
And I don't work on scripts. You know, listen, we're not letting you up there unless we know what you're going to say. And you're going to say,
yeah.
And I'm going, "Hey, man, I don't work that way. It just channels through me. I just feel the audience and I go. I look in the camera and I think, who's listening? And I'll go for it, you know?" And no, they want me to do a script. I say, "Oh, that doesn't work for me."
I haven't seen your second one. I didn't know you did a second one. But I did my first TED Talk just recently, and I had the exact same problem. And I've came up with a solution towards, like you know, like the night before, but then still I had to memorize most of it, but I just can't. I can't memorize. And I don't know what happened, but when I walked down on the stage, everything ended up working out okay. But boy, I was sure as I walked out on the stage, like, this is going to be a train wreck.
Yeah.
This is going to, I'm going to forget everything and it's just going to be a disaster. But it actually, yeah, TED Talk, their format doesn't really work for me. I'm with you. I'm in the same camp as you. Like you just turn the thing on and you make the best of it, and that's all you get.
I've got my repertoires and I've got my variations, and they keep changing, and I just string it together, and then I go with the flow from there, and that's what works for me, you know.
Now, backing up a few minutes, what I'm going to do is I want to say, I sense that what you said is that your experience in dealing with permaculture people from different countries varies. Most specifically, dealing with people in the United States is different than dealing with people in other countries. And you had a reason why you believe that was so. I wish to propose a different reason. But first I want to check with you. Is that what you were saying? Were you saying something like that?
I think... Like, what I'm saying is there is what I call a crisis identity, and that is that and your identity desires fame, and that's where if you haven't got the fame you desire, then you have a bit of a crisis in your identity.
I seem to remember early on I think before I even created Permies, but maybe it was after I created Permies. I think it was after I created Permies, because I didn't know that the PRI forums existed. And but I went out to PRI, and I tried to enter into a conversation, and I was told, well, that's because you're an American, and Americans have permaculture all backwards. They don't understand what it is, so go away. And this was many, many years ago. I know things are much different now. But I'm like, well, how do Americans, you know, have it any different? I don't understand. I mean, I've read all the books and I kind of, you know, so, but somehow because I live in America, I got it all wrong. And now I think I kind of get it. And I have talked to people from outside the United States about permaculture, and it does seem like the general attitude is different. And then I saw, a video. And it was you and Bill Mollison, and I think Darren Doherty is in the class, and the conversation is suggesting that, Bill is being rather emphatic that permaculture does not include metaphysics, and he specifically mentions how something about Americans believe it does or something. So I've got a series of questions in that space, but I believe that what happened was is that at some point in time, some of the people that enjoy metaphysics started to groove on permaculture, and they found that they glued together rather nicely. And then so then they started teaching PDCs with something resembling metaphysics, and then that became rather common. I'm speculating. I'm entirely speculating. Do you believe that my speculation is, like, crazy, or has it got possibly some legs here?
I think it's perfectly correct.
Perfectly correct! Well, okay, let me ask you the direct question. Does permaculture contain any metaphysics?
As a taught design science that's based on proven science, it is impossible for it to include metaphysics in the classroom as a taught subject, because permaculture is about design. And so what is permaculture about? Permaculture is about science and ethics. It is an ethical design science. It's a science that starts with ethics, and it specializes in design. Now, if you're going to design something, it has to be proven. Metaphysics is unproven. Now, in the application of permaculture, it's inevitable that there are metaphysical events. Because it's such a wonderful thing that things that are not proven in science do happen. But you cannot teach what you don't know is going to happen. Can you? And that is cowardice. That is absolute cowardice. You're hiding behind a curtain of unproven science. Now step out from behind that curtain and face the audience and teach what is proven, because that is what's damaging the world. And there are people suffering, millions. Now get on with it.
I want to return to the exact same question in a moment, but first I want to go on to question two and then come back. And question two is, hey, Jeff, who is in charge of permaculture?
Nobody.
Okay.
No, and it is a free, wild element, and it's uncontrollable. The horse is bolted. The stable door is open, and out it went. A wild Mustang, and it's bred out through every wild landscape there is. It is a weed that germinates in damaged country, and it just keeps coming up. While there's damaged country, there's going to be more weeds. Inevitable.
Okay. Which is by design. I mean, Bill kind of turned it loose decades ago in that fashion.
Exactly. And that was one of the wonderful strategies of expansion, and he knew exactly what he was doing.
Okay. So if there's some debate over what is or is not permaculture, then how do we settle that debate?
Well, the most successful systems win.
Okay. All right. So if a person wishes to teach that permaculture does contain metaphysics or their version of religion or how they vote, like they say, if you're not voting this way, then that's not permaculture. That's legit?
If one thing that Bill did was copyright the word permaculture and make it give its ownership to the College of Graduates for the Permaculture Design Certificate course, and that was a wonderful ploy. Now it's become a generic term. It's actually, the word is in the Macquarie Dictionary of Australia and defined as a design science. Even the English government were challenged for defining permaculture during a land settlement case of a community in Somerset. They were actually challenged because they defined permaculture as subsistence agriculture. And that was challenged in an English court of law. And Bill himself even got asked to be involved. And it was redefined in the English court of law as a design science. The precedence is set. So that's what it is. It's a design science. It's been that, you know, that is a precedence that is set. So you can't call it metaphysics. You can't call it subsistence agriculture. It is a science of design that starts with ethics.
Okay. All right. I guess the thing I'm shooting for here is to get some kind of idea of, like, because you know, I've got a bunch of other questions that are going to be in this space too. But okay, I want to coming back to the thing about the metaphysics.
I would like to say, Paul, sorry to interrupt you. I'd like to say that if people believe in metaphysics or religion or whatever belief systems they have, right? So they're anchored in a belief that's taught as a belief, not a science. Now, that is fine. If you have a belief or you practice metaphysics, you believe in metaphysics, or you teach other courses as well as permaculture, and you teach those other courses as in metaphysics, that's fine. If you want to call yourself a witch or a warlock outside of permaculture, that's fine. But definitely, it's not a good idea to try and do that as a permaculturist, say, I'm a permaculturist and a witch and a warlock, right? Can we not separate those? Or I'm only yoga vegan, or I'm only, you know, transcendental meditation, or I link myself to some particular religion and permaculture together. They can be separate and they can be taught in the same location in different named courses. That's absolutely fine. There's no worries about that whatsoever at all. I've taught in religious schools many times on aid projects and non-aid projects, and many people have. It's just putting the fact that they have to go together is a problem. Nothing has to go with permaculture except design science, because what you're going to do is you're going to dilute your audience and the power of the message, and you're going to diminish the volume of your audience. You're just going to subjectively get into a small area of potential. The skill, if you really want that fame, if you want to get past that crisis identity, is broaden your audience. Make it as broad as possible. Make it as diverse as possible. The largest in number and the most diverse in audience type. Make it available to everybody. Now, it's very sort of Gandhian. It's very Darwinian in its success. If it works, you're needed. And you get asked to teach more and more and more, and you won't be able to get to all the invitations you have. Right, and you'll have to then start finding a way to train other people and get them out there and get them out to, you know, projects you can support. But don't limit your audience and don't dilute the subject, because you're going to just genetically encode out of the permaculture system, and fame won't be something you'll gain on the way. It'll be probably a bad reputation instead.
So I'm kind of thinking about, like, right now, you know, up to this moment, whenever I felt like we needed to have an official word on what is or is not permaculture, or what is or is not okay in the world of permaculture, then, you know, and of course Bill coined the word, then it's kind of like, all right, well, normally we would turn to Bill, but Bill's retired. And so it's kind of like, all right, so now what do we do? And it seems to me like Bill has turned this over to you. So when it comes to the you know, what is or is not okay, I up until this moment thought that we turned to Jeff Lawton. So when it's like, who is in charge of permaculture, then it's like, while it's in many ways it's free, and it's everybody, that at least in some small respect, I mean, if we're going to turn to just one person, are we to not turn to you?
Yes, don't turn to me. I mean, I've got no power whatsoever. I've made a few friends and quite a few enemies. The same as Bill. That is exactly what Bill would say. You know, it's a very egalitarian demonstration of what we sensibly, how we sensibly should behave on this planet. And it's already well and truly out there and beyond anybody's individual control and anybody's decision making. There are no way you can make decisions about permaculture, and it's kind of irrelevant anyway if you start trying, because it won't work. It won't work at all. It is a demonstration of our common sense through design science, and I think we're you know, the outer synapse of our brain is developing, the new outer cortex. The outer cortex there is developing as a design mind, and that is the only savior we have, is our own. Our own ability to design our way out of the situation we've got ourselves into. We've got ourselves into a situation we can get ourselves out, and the only way we can do it is by a verifiable design system that is verified and proven by the results of a richer, cleaner, moderated ecosystem, moderated biosphere, moderated climate, moderated water flows, increased diversity of living element. That's what will prove it. Nothing else. No, there's no other decision out there. The big stick is held by the climate and the biology of Earth, and the big stick is starting to be wielded pretty hard, and we're about to get some serious smacking right now.
Okay, I'm a little worried. I'm kind of freaking myself out right now, because when I add in the things that I've learned in the last 11 minutes, and it comes up to if this, then that, if that, then this, then, you know, et cetera, and then these bits of data get compiled together, and I'm kind of freaking out at the conclusions I'm drawing, and I need you to tell me that my conclusions are errant. I believe that one of the things you said is that the horse is out, and then anybody can be it. And then you said something about, well, if they choose to have their permaculture mean these things over here and they don't get a lot of buy-in, then that's not going to turn out to be much of a definition of permaculture. Granted, there are also the definitions that are within the dictionary and the things that are proven. But as far as like whether or not metaphysics is included as part of it, or whether or not a person chooses to teach permaculture with or without certain elements, depends on how many people that they can get. And then when you combine that with my own audience size, now this is where I start to get a little freaked out, because I think if you take these bits of logic and glue them together, then it says that he who has the largest audience decides what permaculture is in the future of permaculture. And I believe I'm the guy sitting on the largest audience. Did you just say that I'm in charge? This is the part where I need you to disprove it. You're going to say, no, Paul, you're not in charge.
No, Paul, you're not in charge. None
of okay, all right, all right, all right.
But really, the definitive work of design has been the permaculture manual, and there's been some, you know, close replications of it, but nobody's taken it any further. And we probably don't need to for quite a while by the look of it. And we agree to teach 72 hours minimum in a permaculture design certificate course, and that covers those 14 chapters of the manual. And as your forum thread your readers group on the manual, which is a wonderful thing that some of your people decided to do, that's made, you know, that's sort of anchored it as well, because I read through it. As I get on your forum and read through what's going on, and I'd like to be more involved if I had the time. But there was all these extra discoveries of what still needs to be taught. And, you know, in some ways, I look at you as someone who's in charge of a very important part of permaculture, because you get out there and you give everything you believe to it, and with these podcasts and with particularly your videos. I mean, no, they're rough cut, and I think you describe yourself in a goofball style, but which is your advertising style. But it's wonderful; it fits that area that attracts so many people. And you have the numbers. There are the numbers. They're coming for that comfort zone. They feel comfortable coming into that, and then you give them those like rough cut videos, which are obviously low budget, but that's fine. It's got the info in it, and that's what you know, that's what people need to do. They need to get it out to people. There's, you have all that info that you're giving to people. That's giving you incredible credit. That's what we need. I mean, it's not that we're in charge, or, you know, just because we give out more info, but it's probably got much better carbon, a better carbon footprint than most of the people out there as keyboard warriors pressing away. You know, typing is not necessarily activism.
Well, not necessarily. True, true. I mean, the thing is that I found that activism wasn't as productive as I would like, and but now when I go down the path that I'm going down, where I'm sharing these bits of knowledge, I believe that and it's like, here I've got a bit of knowledge, and then it gets viewed 500,000 times, then I think that I'm making a bigger difference by sharing these bits than by any activism that I've done in my history. And like, I'm going to change the world by writing letters and, going into meetings and things like that. I think sharing these bits of knowledge has done more. But I guess the thing is that there are people who have been standing up and trying to suggest that they are in charge of permaculture. And there have been a couple of them where it's like, oh, you so are not in charge, because my personal analysis of this of the work of some of these people is that these people are crazy, and yet they're like, you know, I'm in charge.
Well, and there's a lot of dogs that bark at the moon. It doesn't do much to the moon, you know. It doesn't do much.
Like, that's true.
Make a lot of noise, but you know, someone throws a brick at them now and again, and they shut up, you know.
So I guess the thing that I've been doing is I've been thinking that Bill Mollison set up PRI. He turned PRI over to Jeff Lawton. Therefore, if we have any questions over any of the details of where things are and stuff like that, then Jeff Lawton's the guy that we turn to kind of get it all sorted out.
Hold on a second. That's not quite absolutely correct. Bill Mollison set up Permaculture Institute, which still runs, and one of its trading trusts is Tagari Publications. When Bill asked if I would like to take on the permaculture, the Tagari farm, when he initially retired to Tasmania, I was offered to rent the farm for $2,000 a month. He offered me telephone number one, his telephone number, as a bit of a bait. He allowed me to use the original logo, the one that's on the manual, for a little while to help promo. But the strategy that hooked me in there was, he has said, if you do this, you can have the property for $2,000 a month. You can use my telephone number. You can use the logo. But this is Bill talking to me. I want you to set up a non-profit. Right? I want you to set up a charitable trust. And he's saying to me, I want you to call it the Permaculture Research Institute. And that was the bait. And he said, you've got to do that. Otherwise, I won't rent you the property. And he said, and I'll settle your trust. I'll be a settler, and I'll give you $10. Here it is. If you want to do it, you've got to say you're going to do it now. And so I said, I've never done it before. I never thought I'd set up a not-for-profit, never thought I'd set up a charitable trust. And I said, okay. And I set up the Permaculture Research Institute. One of my directors from the very beginning is still with me. The others have changed many times. Craig McIntosh is one of our directors. But Lindsay Smith-Moy has been with me since the very beginning. He's also my accountant, our accountant. That was 1997. So that was my first charity, and I've set up eight ever since. So it's nothing. Bill was only the one who conned me into it.
Okay.
wasn't me. It wasn't. I was an itinerant. I was quite happy being an itinerant, just walking from job to job, teachers. You know, PDC to PDC. I was quite happy with that. And then he threw this challenge in front of me, and I decided to pick it up, and here I am. So It still exists. PRI and PI still exist as separate charities. So Bill's a mate of mine. We visit him a lot. I help him as much as I can. Lisa's the main workforce. And Lisa Mollison is the most incredible person. I have the highest respect for Lisa Mollison. A lot of people don't realize how much work and how much effort Lisa has put into keeping Bill for us. We have to thank Lisa Mollison so much. And a lot of people don't realize she's from California. She's from Sacramento. She's an incredibly strong farm girl. She's brought up really hardcore on big farming country. She can drive bulldozers, drive equipment. She knows her stuff. She's an amazing lady. And she's really behind a curtain there. And I take every hat I've got off to Lisa Mollison, because if it wasn't for Lisa, I don't think we'd have Bill now. There's a lot goes on that, you know, and I think that's a model as well. We don't have to skite about everything we do, and Bill definitely doesn't, and Lisa incredibly doesn't.
Okay, so now my whole world's turned upside down. I thought that it's true then. I think what you said is, Bill did not set you up to be the guy that's in charge of permaculture, but instead he kind of gave you a helping hand to kind of get some stuff kind of going in permaculture.
Yeah, I mean, I was more shocked than anybody, I can tell you. It was 1996. There was a national permaculture convergence at Nimbin, at Robin Francis' place. I got invited to dinner at Bill's place with a few other people one evening. And someone threw the question onto the table at the end of dinner, what are you going to do when you retire? What are you going to do with Tagari Farm? And he elbowed me in the biceps and said, I thought I'd hand it over to this guy. I think I'd ask this guy to rent it. I was sat next to him at the time, and I thought he was joking. And I was really shocked. And I think he liked the fact that I'd created a lot of active people in my teaching, and I'd gone out there and done a few hard yards on projects. And I just done my best I could. And as he said, I turned myself into a good teacher. I wasn't necessarily a good teacher to start with. I was very surprised, because Bill's quite scathing in the English, and I'm English originally. I emigrated to Australia in 1979 when I was 25 years old. But he's always been a great mate, and our friendship's increased over the years, and my support for Bill will never fade, because I could never repay, none of us could repay Bill for what he's done. None of us. Not possible.
Okay. So it sounds like you're kind of you kind of have the nod from Bill, but you kind of don't. Help me, Jeff. I'm trying to wrap my head around.
I am too. I don't know. I don't know what I can expect, and it won't worry me either way. It won't make any difference.
Okay. All right.
It just doesn't work that way. There isn't a nod to be given. There really isn't.
Okay.
There isn't a position to be taken. It's not like that. It's that isn't the way it was established at all. So it's a wild system, and it's out there covering country. Permaculture real estate is increasing every millisecond. And let's hope we're in time. Let's just hope we're in time. We just got to keep pushing on as fast and as hard as we can, and keep gathering troops. And if you can gather troops, we're in the final fight. That's all there is to it. This is the final war. We either win this one or the lights go out permanently. If we win it, they stay on, and things get better all the time.
So one of the problems that I have, and this is, so I'm going to kind of change the subject a little bit, but not too much. One of the problems that I have is that when I go out and I talk to farmers about permaculture, then their response is, get the fuck off my land, because I'm not going to make any more money blowing rainbows out my ass. And so, but my impression is that this is an American problem, that outside of America, this isn't much of a problem. And this is based on some of the things that you've said today and some other things I've been learning over the last 6 months. Whereas I thought this was a global problem, this is pretty much just an American problem. Is that your impression?
Kind of. I mean, it's funny. There's probably more permaculture people in America than there is in Australia, but per capita, there's more here because we have a small population. And it's very formalized here and now respected. And that's why I've been trying to produce very high-quality video so that people can show a very good standard of video presentation, because that is so fast today, people can see it quickly. So we've tried to formalize a website that's very high quality, and a permaculture connecting system with Permaculture Global that's very high quality, and now the videos that are very high quality, and they're free, so you no point in BitTorrenting them because they're free anyway. And this is what we're showing to people now. In Australia, we're very pushed on, our environment's extremely pushed, but at the same time, you know, I've had responses from the US Ag, Soil Conservation Department, where there's some wonderful people who believe in everything we do. And they're working with real-time farmers, so real big farmers changing their soil fertility, processes towards natural processes. And making changes from that top end. But what you'll find is that you've probably got that lack of understanding in America that needs to be put out there in the mainstream. And this is where getting away from the woo-woo stuff, getting away from the metaphysical stuff, and getting more formal demonstration sites and education centers up. In Australia now, permaculture is taught in schools. We have textbooks. We have television programs on prime time, Friday evening, organic gardening programs on television that have a permaculture segment. There are permaculture presenters like the national identities. People know who they are. There's Costa, is a big bearded guy who's a full supporter of talks permaculture all the time on television. It's a common word in Australia now. So teachers came to us and said that the kids with a attention deficiency span are improved after we've taught them through the permaculture garden. There's a program called Outdoor Classrooms. There's a textbook. We sell it on our website called Outdoor Classrooms. There's another one called Eat Your Garden. They're DVDs and textbooks. So they're being distributed all through schools everywhere, and teachers are funded to take the course. These are the government school teachers, because it makes their job easier. These things are coming online, and people need to know this in America. Now, at the other end of the scale, if you're in the third world, a lot of people don't know what a hippie is. They don't know what metaphysics is. They've got no idea what alternative is. Most of them don't even know what a weed is a lot of the time either. So they're just accepting it straight up as you're a professor and this is a science and this can help us. And okay, great. And there's first world and third world people in the same course in a third world location. They realize, wow, you want to learn it as well as us? This must be something new and real. So we leapfrogged all the bullshit in between and gone straight from third world to permaculture by linking first world to third world in the same classroom in a third world location. That's what we've been specializing in. Now, America needs to bridge those gaps. And you know, I think you have a lot of layers in America that need infiltrating very heavily. There's an African-American layer, you know, there's a Latino layer, you know, there are different layers that we need to, like, heavily infiltrate very quickly and close all the layers and get on with this. If the USA Ag, you know, they're actually asking us, would we be interested in working with them to produce videos like we produced and online courses like we produced? Well, yeah, sure we would, but you've got loads of people who could do that as well. I mean, I don't believe in territorialism. They're going to ask the people who are going to get, who are attracting their interest, but, like, I just want everybody to get up with the speed. I'd love to be unemployed. It'd be great. I'll just come back here. I've got no problem staying on this farm where I am. None whatsoever.
First, I want to say that yes, not only are your videos really good, but of course you started off with when you started putting out videos, you started from DVDs, and then you started doing the standalone videos. But I really like your last one. And is it Frank doing the animations on those?
Yeah, we're doing them together. We both. Frank is very artistic. Eco Films, Frank Kopinski. He actually, by accident, we met, and it was a bit of synchronicity, but he came to interview me from the Australian Broadcasting Company doing a series called Characters in the North Coast, and he'd heard about my work in Jordan. And he interviewed me just outside this office 14 years ago. And I didn't know what it was about. I just rapped onto him. I was a bit angry because I was working on the top swell trying to install a food forest with some students, and I didn't really want to stop, and I didn't know who he was and what he could do, and it was a little bit early in the internet days, and I just talked to him for an hour and a half, and then he left, and he said, oh, I'll send you something. And anyway, he sent me a flash video. I didn't even know what a flash video was, and it was called Green in the Desert. And wow, that's pretty neat.
I do remember that. That was on YouTube.
Yeah.
That's a YouTube video. That was good. I like that.
And I said, that's amazing. Can I use that? He said, yeah, put it on your website. That's fine. He's sort of casual type guy, laughs a lot. And anyway, that started a whole working relationship. And he's the center cameraman on the video of Jeff and Bill teaching together, where I've got a nice looking moustache and I'm all dressed up. He's the center cameraman. And then he came to me and said, why don't we just make DVD? Why don't we make a DVD? What do you like to make one on? And I said, well, I'd like to make one on water harvesting and earthworks. And he said, well, let's just run it. And I said, no script? And he said, no, let's just do it and see what falls into the camera, and then we'll edit it out, and then we'll play with a few animations, and we'll do the usual stuff. And I said, can I come in the editing suite and help? He said, yeah, sure. And like, this whole thing just started one by one by one, and we've built our own genre of presentation. And we've also got a presentation style that goes with a keynote, which is a little bit different. So you'll probably see that at Voices, where I present in a style that there's a whole movie running behind me with a very small music undertone. And I don't talk to click images like PowerPoints and stuff. I just talk, and I just try and keep up with the images and movies and collages and texts and whatever's flying on behind me. I'm just looking at it in my laptop and just rapping away and hoping I get through the damn thing.
Well, I really like the last one that you put out, which is the Gabion basket. And while I'm not a particularly big fan of the Gabion baskets, because they typically contain, you know, 'cause the wire that's in them has been treated. But on the other hand, it's like if you've got small rocks and you can bring in the wire, then, you know, Gabion basket sure beats having 30 people trying to pick up a big rock or something.
Yeah.
But the important thing is, though, is the points that are made in the video, basically how to create an oasis in the middle of some serious desert. And the animations really drive the point home. Very well done. Excellent. Very good. And then along the lines of you know, the stuff that I've been putting out, because I started off with just putting out terrible videos in YouTube, because I kind of – a lot of this stuff wasn't anywhere. A lot of the stuff that I videoed wasn't on YouTube or anywhere on the internet, and it's like, you know, people need to find out about this stuff. They don't – a lot of people just can't seem to believe that it exists until they see a video of it. And so even a poor video beats zero video. And so I did a bunch of that, but now I'm working with Bart, and I don't. Have you seen our Mason Bees micro documentary?
Yeah.
Right. How's the quality of that?
Yeah, I mean it's all about, you know, putting your persona through that screen imagery, and I think it's wonderful. It's great. You know, we're always going to have different identities and fingerprints in the way we present in everything we do, and I think that's. It's all needed. It's all wonderful. I mean, we put a lot of work into that animation, and that's been our new evolution. And we're pouring everything we can back into our presentation styles. So we got time-lapse cameras running non-stop on properties, and we've got a quadricopter, a little drone that flies over with a high-definition camera. We even fly it down the inside of swales, and now the 3D animation. The trouble with deserts is to get that water flow at the right time, you've got to be there that one day of the year that you get that massive flood.
Right.
And there's a lot of things out there I'd really like to capture. I feel like a big game hunter with a camera. And John D. Louis the same. John D. Louis is a life partner of mine now with these broad damaged ecosystem repairs. So those images of the lowest plateau. And we're in it till the wheels fall off. We're never stopping. While we can carry a camera, we're out there. If you want something filmed, and people are asking us for everything now. I mean, Sepp Holtz's son is a friend of mine on Twitter, a follower on Twitter, and he's kind of asking, can I go and film at Sepp's place? People are asking me to go to people's places and present them well. I'm not going to present them badly. And that'd be neat. I mean, I'd like to do Alan Savory, Joel Saladin. I'd like to go out there and put my spin on it for them and put our film ability on there and just get them out there. They're all great. They'll love all those guys. Your stuff, everybody's stuff. I mean, if that's the mission and we can help, we're there. We've got the camera ready. We've got the kit ready. Whatever it takes to get people out off the matrix and into the soil, and if that's the result, great. If that's the way we've got to do it, great. I don't care. I just don't care about any of it.
I agree. I like the idea that we get hundreds and hundreds of videos out there that show how permaculture is done and that they all become wildly popular and things like that. And we're trying... So with myself and Bart, because, of course, as you pointed out, I'm terrible at taking this video. But with Bart, who I guess would be my equivalent of your Frank, we're trying. So, in fact, we've got a Kickstarter out right now, although by the time people listen to this podcast, the Kickstarter will probably be over. But we've got a Kickstarter out right now that for a 3-DVD set on Earthworks. I don't know if you saw the little video that goes with that.
Yeah.
But... I know that in the class when I was standing there and the guy is videoing me and I didn't realize I was going to be handed the footage later. We're comparing the techniques that we're using there to the stuff that's in your Earthworks video, and one of the things that I said is that I saw when I watched the video one of the things that I did not like, and I prefer to think of this as is that. In permaculture, there are many artisans in permaculture, and everybody has their different way of going about it. It doesn't mean that it's right or wrong. It means that one artisan likes to use blue, and the other artisan likes to use red. But you had a flat, your dam in your video was flat on the top. And so then I was telling my students that I don't like it to be flat on the top. I wanted it to be lumpy in the top with at least something of a crown in the middle. And so that way when the water lands on it, then it goes off to the sides because the mud puddle is the dam destroyer. And then if you make it flat on the top, you're more likely to end up with mud puddles. Yeah. That's what I said. Now, I'm going to guess. I'm going to speculate, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong. I'm going to guess that after the video people left, that you guys probably put a crown on top of that dam.
Yeah, I mean, that was a long time ago, and it probably crowns itself reasonably well. I mean, a lot of time we grass the top of a dam like that that's not going to get driven over because that was a narrow one. What I have in the online course is 3 hours of Permaculture Earthworks that hasn't been released as a DVD. And they're all like Khan Institute. They're 5 and 10 minute, 12, 15-minute videos. So I have 3 hours of really advanced earthworks inside the online course, and I haven't had time to get them into a DVD. So it was an attempt for people to get into the online course. It was a free gift. The next one's going to be reading landscape. I'm going to do the landscape whisperer type stuff,
See, now I've let go of... In fact, I think it was some channel. What was it? I think the BBC wanted to do a series on me, and they wanted me to refer to myself as the Earth Whisperer. And I told them I can't do that.
There you go.
I can't call myself the Earth Whisperer. I saw a guy who called himself the Bee Whisperer,
yeah.
And he was horrible to bees. He was just terrible. I thought his techniques were abysmal, and in fact they disgusted me. And yet he referred to himself. So ever since then, anytime I hear Whisperer, it sends up a red flag. So I want you. So I'm going to ask you. Please, Jeff, don't be the landscape whisperer. Be Jeff Lawton. You know, I think your name alone carries enough weight. You don't need to be a whisperer. But when it comes to your online PDC, I think I've heard from 60 different people that said that it was excellent. I don't think I've heard. I cannot recall a single person saying that it was anything other than excellent.
We surprised ourselves. I was shocked. I didn't know whether I could do it. It was like stepping onto the TED stage, you know. It's like, well, I'm just going to do it my way. I don't know whether it's going to work. And the endorsements were incredible. We got hundreds of endorsements, and embarrassingly good. But what really shocked me, Paul, was the designs. The designs came in blew my mind. I mean, it's just, and most people allows me to tick the box to say I can show them and publish. I could print a coffee table book of excellence on the designs were, some of them were 95 pages. Some of them were 5 hours of video. I mean, the graphics, I mean, I've employed many people straight out of there. I mean, they're better than me. They're better designers than I could not do many of those designs. But I there was so much information that I was able to give people so fast, and I did this kind of lifestyle promo straight to camera on a lot of the Q&As, and they loved the Q&A answer. And I was often in the crop field on the farm here, or I was in front of an excavator when I was answering the appropriate question. And the new technology with cameras made it easier. And now we're playing around with, like, we've got the latest GoPro stuff, and we've got like pitchfork cam excavator bucket cam and bulldozer ripper cam and, you know, every type poo cam and, you know, cow cam and chicken cam and, you know, like we got a cam on everything. You can't move without there being a cam there, and we've just got so much footage. People are also asking us, they're saying, it's very interesting, people were saying they got to the course, they couldn't normally get to the course because they got invalid parents or disabled children, or they themselves are disabled, or they're right out in the middle of nowhere, they're on a big farm or whatever. But many people said, our kids are watching this, and people said their partner's watching this and they hadn't paid, but they loved it so much, could they pay halfway through because they just wanted the certificate and they wanted to be able to go out there and do it? We converted partners during the course. But then when people said, our kids are walking around the house and they're imitating your voice and they're telling us, they're building swales in the sandpit outside. The kids are correcting us when we're talking at the dinner table about what I said in the course. The kids want to replay the videos all the time. Can you do a homeschooling video? And I thought, damn right we could. Like, wow. And there was many people that said this. And people bring their kids here to meet me because the kids are so excited about it. It's sort of, wow, really? You want to meet me? Like, you know, some kind of clown or something? No. Like, they brought me a present and they really want to see I'm real. And they want to come and see swales. Kids, I'm just like, really? It's like, wow, let's go. I mean, here we go. This is the next crew. This is the real, this could be a real turner. If that's, you know, I got 13,500 questions inside the course. And there were some double ups, of course. I answered every one in front of camera.
Oh, man.
And I was exhausted. They said to me, we can see you falling over towards the end. I mean, I'm just like, come on, let's roll. Let's roll that camera again. Let's go. You know, each one was an hour or so, just less than an hour, a bit more than an hour in each session. And then, but that was a diamond mine of what people want. I realized what they don't know. I realized what they kept answering. You're going to answer this question again about contour? You're going to ask this question again about mosquitoes? My goodness, how many people don't understand this? Like, you know, okay, let's go again, you know. And I've analyzed all those questions, and I've tuned the act up so that, you know, and people need to know this. They need to know. I mean, you've got to feel your audience and feed your audience. So you feed them with what you're feeling they need, and if they're really letting you know, And that's why I've got all the comments running under the other videos. I want to know what do you want? What do you want? If I can do it, let's do it. I don't want to sidestep anything. Let's go.
So now, in the videos that have been out recently, there's hints that you're going to do this again. And in the last video, the hint seemed a little stronger. So you are doing this again, right?
Well, it's actually announced on the newsletter. When you sign up, you get a newsletter. 29th of March, we launch.
Okay. All right.
It'll be a buy-in period when we, you know, when we get to the number that we can handle and no more, then it's, then we're going to close the door and start the event, because it is an event. It is truly an event. That's what's different. This is a once a year event, and it takes 12 weeks to get through without the design exercise, which goes on for quite a lot longer. So we're in the build up. We've got another 4 videos to come. We have another 50 ready, probably in titles, and then we start the event, and the event rolls, and we don't know what the event's going to be like. We don't know what we get. We just open the doors and, come on in, we got to get in before we shut the door. Last time it took about 7 days and we had to shut the door. And then we realized we could handle a couple more. We opened up a little bit for a little while, and then we had to shut the door and roll the show. And it's an event. You know, you got to get in when we open, and we let you know. It's all on jefflawton.com. As each video comes. So yeah, I'm saying, you know, I'm starting to wind up a little bit. But the best video comes at the end, which is the chicken tractor compost system. And she's out in the paddock there, and she's going for her first week of trials, and she'll be 4 weeks into the event when we release that final. It's a great. I love that one. I got 20 eggs out of 24 chickens yesterday, and I haven't fed them.
So now this is based on the video that you sent out like 6 weeks ago, right?
Yeah. We built the whole thing. We got it out. And like everything I like to do. I mean, I don't like, you know, to film things that we don't actually do.
This podcast is continued in part 2.